We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. We're up to the third chapter. In some editions, this is the middle of the second Mishnah. In other editions, this is the third Mishnah. Rabbi Hananya ben Tradion Omer. Rabbi Hananya ben Tradion says the following. Shenayim sheyoshevin ve'en b'neim divrei Torah. If two people are sitting together and there are no words of Torah going between them, harei ze moshav leitzim, then it's considered like a group of jokers are sitting together. Because the verse in Tehillim says, when jokers sit together, God is not present. So you see, this is an indication that this is how you tell whether a person is a joker or not, whether he is a serious person or not. Does God show up in his conversation? Notice we're talking about just two people sitting together. But if two people sit together, and words of Torah do come up between them, then the Shekhinah is there between them. God looks over those people. Shneimar, as the verse says, "Az nidberu yireh Hashem hi shel re'ehu va'yakshev Hashem va'yishma." Then the God-fearing people spoke one another, and God listened, and He heard. Va'yikatev sefer zikaron lefanav, and it was written for remembrance before Him. Liyireh Hashem ulchoshvei shemo, to those who fear God and value His name. From this verse, I know about two who do it. How do I know that even if one person sits and learns Torah, that God has His reward, His wages for that person? The verse says, He sits in silence, He sits alone, for He has taken upon Himself to do what's right. So, our Mishnah discusses two people sitting together. And a person is sometimes gauged based upon his idle chatter. What is he talking about when he's alone? What do a couple talk about when they sit alone for a meal? People sometimes want to have a chavrusa with their wife. They want to learn something together with your wife. It's a nice thought. For most people, it doesn't work. For most people, it causes anxiety. For many reasons. Number one, because men like to focus on one line or one sentence or one paragraph or one word. And women's form of conversation goes on tangents. So you read one line and they say, well, what about this and what about that? And you're like, wait a second, aren't we reading this? And they're like, oh, you don't want to talk to me? And you say, well, I didn't know we were talking. I thought we were learning. Ah. So now you've insulted her. That's it. You understand that obviously if it doesn't take this form, but we have different approaches to learning. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that usually they're going to ask questions which you don't know the answer to. Because they're like from all over. So I recommend that if people are going to learn, that there has to be three understandings. Number one is that even though we said we're sitting down to learn together, we're really sitting down to talk. We've discussed many times that for women, talk is the bond between us. And so if we're doing something that's bonding, we're supposed to learn together, then we're also going to talk. So that's number one. Number two, don't expect to cover too much ground. Meaning if you say, every meal we'll learn a chapter of Navi, that's not going to work. Maybe if you just read it and you don't explain, that could work. But the second some conversation enters the picture, it's just not going to work. So instead of being frustrated, just say we're going to try to learn a little bit of this or that and try to keep it very, very simple and short. I recommend that people read biographies. Take a nice biography and then you could learn from it and you could discuss it and you don't feel like you have to cover ground. I know couples that can spend 10 or 15 years reading one biography. Because each time you read one paragraph, and I prefer biographies where each paragraph is its own story. You know, some biographies give you these long stories, and some biographies, every paragraph is its own story. So I think it's better to find ones like that. So that way you could, each meal, you could read something short. I could recommend two that I like. There's one about Rav Aryeh Levin, HaTorah HaMeshamachat. And there's another one, but the other one is too complex. That's one which I could recommend. HaTorah HaMeshamachat. Because each paragraph there is its own story. And it's beautiful stories. It's stories you can learn from. And the third point is that if you are going to try and learn something like the Parsha or anything else, prepare. Don't just open a book to learn it together. Because if you're learning with her, then she has some expectations that you know something. So prepare. Take some time and prepare. And I think every person should have Divrei Torah in their home, and a person should share with their spouse what they're learning. One of the difficulties in marriage is that even a couple that wants to attain spiritual heights finds themselves at a certain quandary. Let's say the husband is at work, but he has time to go to Daf Yomi Shir, listen to Daf Yomi Shir, or he goes to yeshiva at night. The wife usually doesn't have time for that, at least during the many of the years when you're bringing up kids. She's dealing with diapers, she's dealing with dentists, she's dealing with doctors, shopping, cooking, cleaning. And as much as a wife wants to maintain a spiritual level, it's very hard when there are still kids at home, it's very hard to do that. So it's your job to bring nice thoughts home, to bring nice Divrei Torah, to prepare things on the parasha. A person should always come to the Shabbos table prepared with something. Even if it means you stay in shul an extra 5-10 minutes Friday night or Shabbos day, find something nice. There are things that they give you, there are svarim that give you Dvar Torah with a story for each parasha. There are many svarim like that. There are stories from present day Talmidei Chachamim. There are stories that bring you, there are books that bring you stories from the sages. A person should come to the table prepared, because you're responsible to try and enrich your wife's spiritual world. Very often, she cannot do it alone. So share with her what you're learning. And don't be upset when she asks you a million questions that you don't know the answer to. And you'll feel stupid that you don't know the answer to them, because they're good questions. It's just the way we think differently. They think very practically. You'll tell them a story and they'll ask you some practical aspects of the story that don't work. You won't know the answer. But I can tell you it happens to me too. You just got to get used to it. You tell the story the best you can. You share the thought as best as you can. I also recommend that couples try to read together works on chinuch, on raising children. And just don't buy what anyone says 100%. I always tell people, so long as you're open to the fact that there's no one course that works, you're okay. I say the same thing about my classes. If you listen to my classes, it's only if you take them with a grain of salt, because not everything I say works either. Meaning some of it's going to work for some of the people some of the time, but none of it's going to work for all the people all the time. You got to know what to take and what to discard. So if you read a work on chinuch, on educating kids, so on bringing up kids, so then you read it, and you read it analyzing what you agree with and what you don't agree with. I'm not saying to read it and buy into anything that it says. It's just a starting point for a discussion. My goal when you learn a work on how to raise children is that it gives you a basis, a backdrop for conversation. I don't care if you finish the book or you don't. I care that you guys talk and discuss and see where both of you are thinking and how you can develop. Hopefully it's a work that you'll learn from. The Mishnah tells us that when two people are learning, it's better than if one person's learning. And two people that just sit together, some Torah should go between them. And that's reflective of where we're holding in life. A person has to know that he has a responsibility to do it on his own as well. Now, I used to learn by a Rav named Rav Moshe Halberstam, Zatzal. He passed away about 3-4 years ago. And in his waiting room, he had posted a letter for all the young men who would come to ask him questions. While you were waiting, there was a letter posted there, a letter written by the Rebbe of Satmar, Rav Yoel from Satmar. And in that letter, he writes to the young men, he says, listen here, I know you tell yourself I'm going to come home and learn something, but the way life works, the second you walk through that door, there are a million other things to take your time, and you know the phone's going to ring, or your neighbor's going to knock at the door, your wife's going to have something to ask you, or the kids are going to have something to ask you, or you're going to see something you have to take care of. The nature of time is that if you're home, you don't utilize it well. You want to learn, go out to a Beis Medrash. Go get a chavrusa and learn. Our recommendation is that for the first year or two of marriage, we recommend that people bring a chavrusa home at night. Your wife isn't comfortable, you're newly married, you're going to go out to Beis Medrash every night. Most wives aren't happy about that. But if you bring home a chavrusa for an hour or two and you learn at home at night, that's a good thing. Then you're home on the one hand. But on the other hand, if you have a chavrusa, chances are you won't get called to the phone and she won't come in and talk to you about 10 different things. When I was engaged, so we were looking for an apartment to live in. And one of my teachers told me, He said, I'm sure your wife is the biggest tzaddikus on the planet. I don't know her, but I'm sure she is. But I got to tell you, you can't expect of the biggest tzaddikus on the planet that when you're sitting in the same room as her learning, she won't ask you a million things during an hour. So though, if you want to succeed in learning anything, once you're married, try to find a house which has an apartment which has one extra room. Meaning you have the bedroom, you have the kitchen, maybe you have a dining room, maybe not. But there should be another room where you could go learn. Because if you expect to get any learning done, you cannot expect it. I don't care what wife you have, you cannot expect to get it done if you're in the same room she's in. If you're in another room, you still can barely expect to get anything done. But then there is at least a chance. Because you're there, she's in a different room, she's doing her thing, you're doing your thing. If you can walk into a room and close the door, then there's a greater likelihood you'll get something done. Today, rent here in Jerusalem is so high, it's I don't know if anyone can afford just to take that luxury. But the flip side of it is, if you can have a chavrusa, so it's not only what the Mishnah says, that when two people are learning, so then it's better than one person, it's also practically more people can accomplish. And another point is, that if you have a chavrusa, then you're more likely to stick to the time. When a person has a study partner and there's a set time, then it's more likely that he'll actually learn. When a person says, my time to learn is this, well, if there's a wedding, well, if they need you, if you're on the phone, so everything pushes us around. Most people are not organized enough that they'll stick to a time if they don't have a study partner. So I could tell you that I personally very often will set up a study partner. I'll set up a chavrusa for 10 minutes. But I know that if I can get there for those 10 minutes, then I'll end up staying and learning the rest of the time. It forces me to be there in the Beis Medrash learning for those 10 minutes. Once I get the start, then I'm not going to go back home. Hopefully I'll continue learning. Mishnah Gimel. Rabbi Shimon Omer. Rabbi Shimon says, Shlosha she'achlu al shulchan echad. Three people ate by one table. So why does it have to be that three people are eating? Because if three people sit down to eat, we assume that they have some time. Three people, if you're in a rush, you don't usually sit down with two other people to eat a meal. So we're talking about some kind of meal where people have time. So if you have the time, and you're not talking Divrei Torah during the meal, after the meal, so then it's as though they ate from animals that were slaughtered for idols. Because the question is, am I eating to live or am I living to eat? That's what they say, the difference between the United States and Israel. They say in the United States, people live to work. And in Israel, they work to live. People are always living here. You notice people take the afternoon off. People have Tuesday afternoon off. They have 2 hours in the middle of the day off. You come from the United States and you say, what's going on here? What kind of backward country is this? And the answer is, it's not backward, it's forward. Well, you're working to live or you're living to work? If you're working your whole day and your whole night, and by the time the weekend comes, you're all wiped and you never lived life and you never saw your kids. So which way is it? You know the story about the Mexican and the businessman? There was a businessman who went down to Mexico. He's very wealthy. He comes to the beach and he sees a Mexican come out, draw out a fishing rod, toss it in, pull out a fish, nice big fish, go over to the side, skin it, slice it open, put it on a fire, sit down, put his sombrero over his face, and sit down and enjoy the afternoon sun. He's staying there and he's watching, and he sees that the guy doesn't get up to fish again. So he walks over to the guy and he says, sir, can I ask you a question? So he says, yes. He says, I saw you catch this big fish in about 2 minutes. Why don't you go out there and catch another 5 or 10? So he says, why would I catch another 5 or 10? He says, well, then you can take them back to the market and sell them. So the Mexican says, yes, and then? He says, and then you'd have more money, and then you could hire more people, and you could catch more fish, and then you could build a big business. You could have a lot of money. And after about 15, 20, 30 years, you'd be like me. So the Mexican says, yeah, and you? He says, well, I have this big business, and I have the money, so I can afford to come out here to Mexico and sit down on the beach and enjoy the sun. So the Mexican says, well, I did that with one fish. So... yeah, the question is, what are you doing? Are you living to work or working to live? So if people have the time to sit down at the table, the question is, which one is it? Are they sitting down to eat the food? Are they living to eat the food? Or are they eating the food in order to live, to have a productive life? And we say the measure of that is, does God enter the picture? Am I sitting at the table and Do I talk Torah? Does that come up at the end of the meal? We're not supposed to talk while we eat. People could choke. The idea is you eat. And then you talk some divrei Torah. Shenemar ki koshuchanot mal'u ki tzo'ah b'li makom. The tables are described as they're filthy, disgusting tables because they don't have the presence of God. So we say that at the minimum, when a person benches, when he says the after blessing, that's a reflection of the idea of, that God is present at the table. But the more proper way is that if a person actually has the time to sit down for a more serious meal, where three people are sitting down for a meal, then it's more proper to say some words of Torah. Rashi quotes a custom that they used to read a little bit of Torah, a little bit of Nevi'im, a little bit of Ksuvim. I tried it for a while. It's a nice custom if you could do something with it. If you can explain what you're reading, if it's not just rattling it. And again, we're talking about a situation where you have the time. In the middle of a person's day, or for most people's breakfast, you don't have time for that. The Mishnah is talking about a person who's sitting down for a meal where he has time. But if three people sat on one table, and they did say words of Torah on that table, it's as though they ate from God's table. It's as though God was present. It was God's table they ate from, as the verse says, Shenemar, Vaydaber Elai Zeh Shulchan Asher Lifnei Hashem. The prophet in Ezekiel describes how God told him, this altar is the table before God. What's the idea? How's the altar like the table before God? Because if you talk Torah on the table, you're indicating that God is present in what you do. And so if God is present in what you do, then even what you eat, it's like sacrifices before Hashem. It's worthwhile. There's a purpose in everything here. It's not just about living the mundane life. Now, the concepts here are very important. Let's see how we apply it. What's the idea of the meal? Am I eating in order to live, or is there something... Am I living in order to eat, or is there something positive I could get out of the meal? One of the things that men very often miss, it's a fine point, but many men miss it, and that is that the woman very often tries to express her affection through the food she prepares. And men walk in, and they're, that was good, rub-a-dub-dub, thanks for the grub, I'm all fed up, and everything's great. A person should take the time to have the sensitivity to realize that that's what's going on here and to show his appreciation. I remember I was a guest for Shabbos, and they were discussing who next week's Shabbos guest would be. I was a bachelor still, and I heard the wife telling her husband, yeah, invite him. He likes my food. He always asks for seconds. I realized that to her it's a compliment if you ask for seconds. I always thought it was impolite. Maybe they don't have enough. And here I heard that no, to the woman, if he asks for seconds, he likes my food. I hear her telling her husband, invite that guy, because he always gives me that compliment. He asks for seconds. A husband has to think about that. There's a story about... we have 2 minutes, right? There's a story about a couple who the husband's going out to work in the morning, and the wife asks him, Chaim, tell me, what do you want for supper tonight? Chaim says, I don't care, whatever you want. The middle of the day, he gets a phone call to work, and she says, Chaim, what do you prefer for supper tonight? And he's like, I don't know, we could have leftovers from Shabbos, whatever's easy, whatever's good for you. And she says, no, but what do you want? And he says, okay, the leftovers from Shabbos. Fine. He gets home that night, the leftovers are ready, he eats it, fine. Next day, same thing. Chaim, what do you want for supper tonight? It really doesn't matter. Whatever you want is fine by me. Yeah, but what do you want? I don't know, what do we have? What's easy to make? Well, do you want the soup, or do you want me to maybe make the lentils you like, or the soup is fine. Great. Okay, fine. They agree that the next night they have a wedding. They're going to be on time. They have to rush. The next morning, he figures, okay, tonight there's no supper. We're okay. She says, Chaim, what do you want me to wear tonight to the wedding? So he says, well, I think it's a good idea to wear a dress. And like, it's a good idea. No, but Chaim, what do you want me to wear? What are my choices? Well, there's the black dress and the blue dress and the green dress. Well, the black dress is nice. Okay, Chaim, what earrings should I wear? I don't know, but I got to go to work. I think you could figure it out. Okay, he's at work. He gets a phone call. Chaim, what necklace should I wear? I don't know. Which earrings did you choose? Could you help me with that, Chaim? What earrings do you want me to wear? I like the pearl earrings. And what necklace? Well, the pearl necklace goes with the pearl earrings. Okay, good. He comes home that night and he's in a rush. They got to go. And Chaim, what head covering should I wear? One that covers your head. No. Which one do you like? Okay, the purple one. Yeah, but with which shoes? With which shoes does this match? Look, we have to go. This isn't fair. I have to go. We promised them we'd be on time. I have to go. Whatever shoes you wear, just don't come barefoot. We got to go to the wedding and let's go. Now he's upset. She's upset. They go out to the wedding. They come to the wedding. She goes to the women's section. He goes to the men's section. He goes to his rabbi, to his friend. He says, I don't get it. The woman can't make a decision in her life. Every day, I got to tell her what to make for supper. Why does she have to ask me every morning? Now it comes to the wedding. She's got to ask me what to wear, what shoes, what necklace, what earrings. What's going on here? They don't teach girls how to make decisions. I got to make every decision in the house. She goes over. Now, let's understand where she's coming from. And she says, you know, I'm going to see my friends I hadn't seen for ages. And I didn't care about what I think I look nice in front of them. I cared about the 2 minutes I'd be with him. And he'd see me. And I wanted to know what he likes. I asked him what he wants me to wear. I want to look nice for him. And he can't appreciate that. I know what's easy for me to make at night. I know what food I have in the freezer and in the fridge and what food requires my going out and shopping and what's easier and what works with my schedule. But I want to make what will make him happy every night. And so I ask him. And he can't appreciate that. He has no patience to answer me. So the Mishnah teaches us something about what the meal is. And we have to know that the meal is an area where the wife can sometimes try to show her affection. And it's a key point where the husband can show his appreciation, which we've discussed many times, that the glue of marriage is our capacity to show appreciation. The more we can show appreciation, the more we show our spouse that we're connected to them. Laila Tov.